The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, last time I was here, and maybe I could be a little bit lower in volume, or maybe a little trimmed or something. I feel like I'm having to whisper to not... Let's see, how's that? Is that better? Does that seem okay? That feels better to me. Now I can speak at a more normal... I don't feel like I have to suppress my normal volume. The last time I was here, I spoke about working with thoughts and thinking in our meditation practice. And, in our meditation practice, when we explore working with thoughts, a lot of it has to do with letting go of thoughts, that we acknowledge that we've been thinking, and potentially, as I recommended in the guided meditation, when you notice that you've been thinking, see how it's impacted you. Check into how it's felt in the body, whether there's been any tension that's crept in or any emotion that's come up. And so the exploration around the process of thinking in sitting meditation has a lot to do with seeing what the consequences of thinking are and how they feel in the mind and body. And so I spent some time talking about that the last time I was here. And what I'd like to explore today is working with thinking in our daily lives. And this is it's a different kind of thing, because in our daily lives, we need to think. We can't just say, planning, judging, remembering. We can't just say planning, and never plan, We do need to engage with our thoughts in our daily lives. And so part of the exploration here is around how to engage with the content of our thoughts skillfully. So that's kind of what I'd like to explore today, is what it means and how we work with our thoughts as a practice skillfully throughout our day. So in the Buddha's discourses, he offered at one point he said he was doing meditation, and he noticed that the thoughts kind of had two categories. He said sometimes thoughts seem like they're unskillful, and those thoughts were motivated for him out of ill will, cruelty, and a sense desire. And the way he recognized them as unskillful or as unhelpful was that he looked at them and he said, when I look at these kinds of thoughts that have this motivation of cruelty, ill will, and sense desire, they tend to lead to affliction, either for myself or someone else, or for both. And so he began recognizing that certain kinds of thoughts were not so helpful for him. And then other kinds of thoughts, he noticed, thoughts that were motivated by kindness, compassion, and letting go. He said those didn't have any issue. He said, I noticed I could think those thoughts all day and all night and nobody would come to any harm from those thoughts. So those thoughts, he said, were not a problem. He did actually recognize that in meditation, when he was in meditation, that even the skillful thoughts could lead to an agitation of mind that would not be productive for meditation. And so he said to himself, in meditation, it's even helpful to let go of those skillful thoughts at times. But in our daily life, this is our main exploration. Are our thoughts skillful or unskillful? Are they helpful or not helpful? So this is our first reflection on looking at thoughts in our daily lives. Are they helpful or not? Do they lead to affliction or do they lead to happiness? And one of the suggestions around looking at thoughts, I mean, this this kind of reflection, this is looking at our thoughts. And I think that we can kind of know for ourselves when thoughts are helpful and when they're not. And at least at the first level, we can recognize that thoughts of judgment and thoughts of anger and hostility, those tend to not be so helpful for us. Thoughts of kindness, thoughts of compassion, the thoughts of release, those tend to lead us to more happiness in our lives. So what do we do if they're unskillful? I mean, usually we can't just say, oh, there's an unskillful thought, I'll stop thinking that thought. You know, we don't have that kind of control over our minds often. And so there's some kind of processes to go through to explore. What does it mean? How do we work with thoughts when they're unskillful? So the first thing to recognize is, the biggest danger of unskillful thoughts is that they may lead us to do something that would be following on from them. So if we're thinking thoughts about being angry about somebody, for instance, being angry with somebody, if we continue to think those thoughts, it might lead us to do something, to yell at them, to lash out at them, to do something unskillful. And so that's the biggest danger of unskillful thoughts. And so that's the first thing to recognize or to explore is, okay, recognize not to suppress. And this is a big piece that I want to encourage in looking at our thoughts in daily life. It's not about suppressing our thoughts. It's about clearly recognizing, oh yeah, I'm having these angry thoughts. But can we, in recognizing that, the practice becomes, can you feel the consequences of that? Can you feel the anger that's present? Or whatever else, I mean, if they're judging thoughts or fearful thoughts, there's often an emotion going along with these thoughts. So can you feel that? Not suppress it, but also to not kind of believe or to leap onto the train of that thought. So something I talked about last time is the way when we have certain kinds of thoughts, like angry thoughts tend to create angry feelings. And when we have angry feelings, it tends to create more angry thoughts, which tends to fuel angry feelings. And it's kind of like this engine of creating anger. And so the practice in meditation becomes acknowledging that there's angry thoughts present and perhaps the feeling of anger present, not repressing it, not suppressing it, but also not expressing it. This is really the middle way that the Buddha pointed us to, neither repressing nor acting on these unskillful qualities in our minds. So that's one of the first things to recognize when there's an unskillful thought. Can I acknowledge it? Can I be at ease with having it and not act on it? That can be more challenging than, you know, that can be more challenging than it sounds. I mean, maybe it doesn't even sound that easy to allow a feeling and not act on it, to not repress and not express. That's part of the exploration around unskillful thoughts. As a support for working with unskillful thoughts, one of the things we can explore is, you know, thinking about recollecting what some of the drawbacks of those thoughts might be. You know, what this is one of the things the Buddha pointed to in his own experience when he was reflecting on unskillful thoughts. He said, I noticed that when I contemplated the drawbacks of these unskillful thoughts, they tended to subside. And so if we can recognize, acknowledge for ourselves, yes, I'm having these thoughts about judgment or fear, and if we can reflect on what the drawbacks might be. You know, what are the drawbacks of those angry thoughts? Well, some of the drawbacks might be that it's tending to create feelings of anger in us. It's tending to create a situation in which we might act out of unskillful emotions. So just reflecting on the drawbacks of the thoughts. So that's kind of an overview or an outline of the work with thinking in daily life. You know, first of all, acknowledging what's skillful and what's unskillful. Another way to explore this is to look at some of the guidelines the Buddha offered for wise speech. So he suggested that our speech be not false, not harsh, not divisive, and not idle. So he framed them in the negative, so essentially refraining from harsh speech, false speech, idle speech, and divisive speech. He also suggested that our speech be what he called timely, or spoken at an appropriate time, and beneficial. So looking at this with respect to our thoughts, we can kind of explore, almost as a way to look at, are our thoughts unskillful? We can look at, is our internal thoughts, or our internal speech, is it harsh? Is it divisive? Is it false? Or is it just kind of random chatter in your mind? If it's got those qualities, it may not be the most helpful kind of thoughts. So that's a one way to explore what unskillful thoughts are. So these guidelines, all of these guidelines that I mentioned, not harsh, not false, not divisive, and not idle, as well as timely and beneficial, I like to kind of collect those into three basic questions for ourselves, both around speech and around our thoughts. Are our thoughts true? Are they necessary? And are they kind? So it's a little simpler way to think about those questions. Are they true? Are they necessary? Or are they kind? So looking at each one of these, so reflecting on the truth of our thoughts. Now again, This is looking at, is our inner speech or are our thoughts skillful? You know, if we're saying untrue things to ourselves, may not be the most skillful thing to be saying. We say untrue things to ourselves all the time. You know, we for example, judging thoughts. You know, thoughts judging about people. Often judgment is based on some kind of assumption we're making about what somebody else is thinking or feeling, what their intention or motivation is. And so actually our judgments are not based on a true kind of knowing what's happening, but based on an assumption. And so from that perspective, you know, we don't actually know if our assumptions are true. Often, we don't know if our assumptions are true. We really don't know what's going on inside somebody else's mind. So looking into our thoughts, our thoughts about others, are they true? I mean, they may seem true to us, and that's actually something to connect with. You know, so there's the feeling of what feels emotionally true, and then what's what the right word is, maybe actually true. I mean, we have to acknowledge for ourselves when something feels emotionally true that there's something that we need to look at. You know, if we feel that we're being dismissed, for instance, you know, by somebody, and we're having judgmental thoughts about somebody. Well, they're not taking me seriously. They don't like me, or they, you know, whatever we say about them. You know, if we look into it, we may not know that that's actually true, but our inner reality is that we feel dismissed, and so that's something to acknowledge. You know, that Okay, so there's this feeling of being dismissed here. No, I don't know, I don't actually know if it's true what's happening over there, but the truth of my experience here and now is the feeling of being dismissed. And that's useful to connect with. That's useful to acknowledge. So it changes the tenor of thoughts around the situation. You know, if you're sitting there thinking, well, that person X and Y, that person is not paying attention to me, or that person is, you know, thinking I'm no good, or that person thinks I can't do things well, or whatever. That's kind of putting your attention out into, or putting you're directing your thoughts and your beliefs and your views out into the world, as opposed to acknowledging your inner reality, which is, something feels off here. I'm feeling dismissed. That is more true. That is the truth of your inner reality. And it, you know, whether or not there's the truth of the thoughts, that is the truth of your inner reality. Does that make sense, the distinction I'm making there? So it's acknowledging what the felt truth is. So, you know, when we're working with thoughts and recognizing, okay, so those thoughts may not be true, it's really important to then not say, well, if, you know, the thoughts aren't necessarily true, then the feelings, you know, I shouldn't be having these feelings. That's not what I'm saying. It's mostly what I want to get across, you know, that it's really helpful to acknowledge what you are feeling. There may be, I mean, it is possible that somebody is being dismissive. It's also possible that you have a history in your past of somebody being dismissive with you, and that this person has some certain characteristics that really remind you of that person, and that's the hook. And that it may not be that the person is being dismissive, but there's conditioning in your mind that's connected to that. So that's an exploration for us to make. So there's an interesting exploration around thoughts, whether they're true or not. One of the explorations has to do with how much we believe the thoughts. So one of the things, you know, so for instance, you know, if I have this thought, I'm a failure. You know, is that true? Is that thought true? In certain states of mind, I really would believe that thought. You know, it's like I would sign up. Yeah, that's true. I'm a failure. So one of the things here to explore is, so there's the thought, I'm a failure. And then there's how much we believe that thought. And what I discovered in my own experience around thoughts like that one for myself was that at different times, there were different levels of belief in that thought. So sometimes it was, you know, I really did believe that. I mean, I was in a negative mood. I felt I was depressed, or felt like, you know, I wasn't accomplishing things. And the mood of my mind had me really believing that thought. So I would have said, yeah, that's true. At other times, I began recognizing that thought could come up. I'd be like, well, wow, you know, I don't believe that right now. You know, that's not my actual experience right now that I'm a failure. But the thought is there. So I found that very interesting to recognize that certain thoughts, especially ones that were self-referential, you know, certain ones that were self-referential, to look at the belief around them. You know, how much do we believe that thought? This can also be explored around judging thoughts with others. So reflecting on, contemplating whether what we are telling ourselves in our mind is really true. Then looking at the kindness aspect. Are our thoughts kind? You know, this is a lot of, you know, we think harsh thoughts, unkind thoughts about ourselves, about others. So again, you know, looking at that as being unskillful and not, again, not repressing it, not saying I shouldn't be thinking that thought, because in all likelihood, you know, we can't stop thinking these thoughts. It's not that often these kinds of thoughts, these self-critical thoughts or judgmental thoughts about others, come from a long history of conditioning. That, you know, it's like we've worn these grooves in our minds, and we tend to think certain things about ourselves and other people. And when we're, you know, when we're just, we get ourselves in certain situations, this kind of thought tends to happen. So a lot of the times it does feel like our thoughts are kind of out of our control. And so the practice with mindfulness is to not try to stop the thoughts, but to begin to become conscious of them. Begin to recognize, this is the kind of thought that's happening right now. How does it impact me to have this kind of thought? Is this a true thought? I mean, actually, this is, you know, when we reflect on, is it true, is it harsh, you know, is it kind or is it true? When we reflect on that, we begin to kind of connect with this aspect of looking at the drawbacks. Because when we see we are thinking harsh thoughts to ourselves or to others, or untrue thoughts about ourselves or about others, we almost intuitively know that those have drawbacks. We intuitively recognize, well, these thoughts aren't true, you know. So we can begin to connect with that. There can be a little loosening when we recognize the drawbacks of these thoughts. And then the third aspect of looking at our thoughts necessary. So much of our thoughts are kind of just noise. You know, our mind just kind of chattering off. So what the exploration I like to look at here is, you know, it's not about stopping these thoughts. You know, it's not about saying, well, these thoughts are unnecessary, I should try to stop them. But it's kind of looking more deeply, because often when we have a pattern of thinking thoughts that actually aren't so necessary. I mean, how many of you have had the recognition of, you know, there's something that needs to happen in the future, and you plan it out, you figure out what, you know, what's the best thing to do, and then you find yourself planning it out again, and again, and again, and again, and again. I mean, we often find ourselves thinking the same things over and over and over again. One thing Gil Fronsdal said at one point, he said, if somebody were sitting on my shoulder and could hear my thoughts, they would think I was crazy. You know, hearing me say the same thing to myself over and over again, the 500th time already, isn't it enough? So this is a habit we have, kind of to repeatedly think about things. So when we notice that, when we notice that kind of unnecessary, repetitive nature of the thinking, it can be helpful to look a little more deeply, not to just say, well, I don't need to think about this, you know, why don't I stop thinking about this? You know, again, we can't seem to stop ourselves from doing this. So the exploration is to go a little more deeply. What's the motivation? Why is the mind thinking about this? So with planning, for instance, you know, there might be a little bit of anxiety connected with that, a little bit of fear. I mean, I know my mind, I find myself thinking the same thing over and over again because I'm afraid I'm going to forget it. And if I simply take a little note, you know, jot it down somewhere, it's like, oh, phew, okay, I can let go of that one now. So looking at what when thoughts seem to be unnecessary, looking at what's going on around those thoughts. Some thoughts serve some kind of purpose in our minds. And one of the most common things that our thoughts do for us, or one of the most common things that our thoughts create in our lives, is the story of me. Over and over again, telling ourselves who I am, what I do, what I think, how I feel, what I believe, what I like, what I don't like. If you listen to your thoughts, you'll see. That's a lot of what goes on in there. We're kind of just telling ourselves who we are over and over again. So this type of thought tends to solidify ourselves, solidifies our belief about who we are, what we do, what we like, what we don't like. And this can also tend to kind of put us into a box. We tell ourselves enough, this is the kind of person I am, we'll believe it. And we may not have the confidence to step outside of that self-definition. I'm the kind of person who is very shy, telling myself I'm shy over and over and over again. I can't go to parties. I can't create. I don't know how to talk to people. Telling myself that over and over again tended to make me never go to parties. When I did, I stood in a corner. I was terrified. So, just that kind of self-referential talk about who I was, what I could do, kind of put myself in a box, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. So one of the things to look at is what purpose are these thoughts serving? If you look at your thoughts and see, these don't seem to be terribly necessary, kind of look at, first of all, is there some kind of an emotion that's connected with these thoughts? Some kind of either sense of pride or self-righteousness or anger or anxiety or fear. There's all kinds of emotions that can fuel repetitive thoughts. Or it might simply be a habit of telling yourself who you are. Or maybe it's a habit of entertaining yourself. That's also something that our minds do. Sometimes thoughts are necessary. There's a lot of our thoughts. Actually, when we look at our thoughts, I think a huge chunk of them, I can't put a percentage on it, but a huge chunk of our thoughts are not either, most of them are not that necessary. And then of the others, some of them are unkind and some of them are untrue. So there's a lot of our thoughts that it's really helpful to look at and reflect on. Is this kind of thought a helpful thought? There are some thoughts that we need to engage with, absolutely, in our lives. We have to plan at times. We have to look at when thoughts are necessary, when thoughts are true. How do we engage with that? So this first part of the talk has been a lot about looking at kind of the thoughts to, I wouldn't say so much let go of. There's a kind of letting be, perhaps, that we can do around our unskillful thoughts, that we can begin to acknowledge them, recognize them, begin to explore, investigate. What's the purpose they're serving? How are they connected to our deeper emotional life? And then with respect to thoughts that are helpful, that are necessary, how do we engage with those? So this practice with working with thoughts in daily life, it's a skill. It's not something that you can just decide or choose and say, well, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to pay attention to my thoughts. I mean, you can make that resolve, but it's not an easy practice. It's kind of, in our daily lives, we're so used to kind of getting hooked into our thoughts and following our thoughts that it's not an easy place to kind of bring our mindfulness into. So I like to make an analogy here, because it's a skill and it needs practice. So how do we practice working with thoughts in daily life? The first thing to recognize, I mean, the analogy that I like to use here is, and I've used this in this group before, so some of you may have heard this, an analogy I like to use is, if suppose you want to learn how to play basketball. You know, you're not going to start by throwing yourself into the middle of a professional basketball game. You're not going to try to learn how to play basketball that way. Rather, you'd start on a basketball court by yourself, learning how to dribble, learning how to shoot, and then maybe you'd bring a friend in, practice with somebody you trust who's not going to, like, roll over you or push you over or hurt you in some way. And then you practice that way for a little while, and then maybe you join a pickup game with some friends, again, friends you trust, and then you might move into a competitive game. So there are stages you'd go through to practice a skill like that, you know, a team skill. I mean, really, you know, practicing with thoughts in daily life is a team skill, because, you know, you're engaged with people and your thoughts are going, and when you're engaged with somebody, you know, you're so focused often on being engaged with them that it's hard to kind of catch your thoughts before they kind of leap out into your speech. So, you know, this is kind of contact mindfulness here, engaging with, working with our thoughts in daily life. And so it's helpful to create some practices for yourself to work with exploring thinking in daily life. Start where it might be a little simpler. So sitting meditation is the most structured of all practices, and this is a place to begin working with thoughts. And, you know, what I suggest in the guided meditation is kind of the beginning of exploring thoughts in your mind. When you wake up into thinking, don't just immediately, you know, say, oh, I'm thinking, come back to the breath. Take some time to explore. Thinking is happening. How has that impacted me? So you begin to get a sense of that connection between thinking and how it impacts the body, how it impacts your emotional life, so that you begin to get a sense of that in sitting meditation. So that's the most structured way to begin to explore thought. Just that simple moment of when you wake up, and you have an opportunity to do that so many times in meditation, you know, it's like, This was a great thing for me in sitting meditation. When I stopped thinking about thoughts being the enemy and started looking at it as, what can I learn from this? It's like every time I woke up into thinking, it was another opportunity to learn something about my mind, an opportunity to learn, how does that kind of thought impact me? Okay, I'll check that out. So that it's not that thoughts are the enemy in our meditation. And we don't have to spend a lot of time with that in meditation. We can acknowledge it, feel into how it's impacted you, and then let go and move back to the breath or back to just the present moment experience. But, you know, every time you wake up into thinking, it's another opportunity to practice this very critical skill. So, you know, I really encourage you not to think of thoughts as the enemy in your meditation, but think of it as your opportunity to do the most structured kind of practice around this very difficult skill, working with thoughts. Then I'd suggest, so that's the kind of the most structured form of practicing with thoughts. Then there's, you know, finding some time in daily life when you're doing things, but probably by yourself. So when there's not so much charge, that's another time when it can be really challenging to work with thoughts. If you're in a charged situation, you know, if you've just come out of a meeting, a very intense meeting, you know, there's probably a lot of thoughts and a lot of emotions going on. So that's probably a more advanced form of working with thoughts. Instead, I'd suggest you pick some time that's not terribly charged. Maybe when you're doing chores, you know, maybe, you know, making your bed or washing dishes. You know, check in. Can you be aware? Can you notice while you're doing the dishes, what are the thoughts that are happening? You know, so use that as a mindfulness practice, not to, I mean, often when we think about being mindful while doing our chores, we move into body. You know, we think about, okay, so I'm going to need to be aware of all the movements of making the bed, or if I'm doing mindfulness while I'm washing dishes, it's like, notice the water on the hands and the warmth and the hardness of the dishes, and that's where our minds go. And that, I mean, that's helpful. It's really helpful, but it's also helpful to explore, recognize that this is an opportunity to look at what are the thoughts happening while you're washing the dishes. So one of my favorite times right now, and actually I do a little bit of directed practice around this, I've realized that I need some time during the day to let my mind kind of do a drift think, you know, so that I can allow my mind to kind of explore the terrain of my projects, my teaching, my administrative things, and, you know, remember, oh yeah, I need to do that, oh, I need to do that. It seems to be helpful to me to just have a kind of a time where my mind just, I don't have a structured time to think about. I mean, I don't have a, I'm not thinking about it in a structured way, it's more of a drifting, but I attune my attention to my thoughts while I'm doing my exercise in the gym. So I'm doing my stair climbing. I do my stair climbing. And I consciously let my mind go into that space of what are the thoughts that kind of pop up. So I'm not trying to think. I'm not saying, what do I need to do about this or that? It's kind of I put myself into a floating space and then allow the thoughts to pop up. And then I have a pad of paper where I, you know, jot down, oh yeah, that I need to do that, or I need to do that, or this thought comes in about this presentation I need, oh, okay, that. You know, it's just like kind of a random selection of all kinds of things that pop in that half hour. And so that's a way, in effect, of allowing the mind to think and just watching the thoughts that come up. So when you're doing some kind of a chore or something, you know, just being curious, what kinds of thoughts pop up for you in that time? So it might be helpful or interesting for you to explore this kind of practice by giving yourself a reminder. You know, maybe you do this at breakfast, you know, sitting at the breakfast table, you know, put a note on your breakfast table, mindfulness of thinking. Just remind yourself that can be an orientation for this time while you're eating. And just see, you know, just it's kind of like a be open. It's more of an open awareness, in effect. You know, let yourself be aware of whatever's happening, you know, the food, the what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and the thoughts that are coming in. So it's not a directed awareness. It's more of a receptive awareness that includes and what thoughts are coming up. So this kind of practice may be something that you're not so familiar with. So, you know, keep playing with it. Play with it for a while and see if you can begin to catch those thoughts that come in. And then you can begin to recognize, okay, is this a true one? Is this necessary? Then you might move into a slightly more challenging situation, still structured. You know, find a friend who's willing to have a conversation with you. And it would be ideal if this friend would also be willing to do the same thing. Like, let's see if we can be aware of our thoughts before we speak. You know, let's see if we can know what we're going to say before we say it. You know, that kind of exploration is really, this really bridges the thinking, speaking world. So see if you can pause before you speak. In that pause, you'll probably know what your thoughts are, what you're going to say before you say it. And then you have an option, you have a choice to recognize, do I want to say that? Is that something I want to bring out in here? Is that true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And so this is the place where thoughts and speech really connect. And then this practice, of course, can go out. You know, when you get more skilled at watching your thoughts in these more structured ways, the skill begins to be able to be applied in more and more of our everyday lives. So there's, in the meantime, you know, it's really likely we're going to be recognizing that some thoughts aren't so skillful and that we're acting on them. And so one of the things I like to encourage people is to, first recognize that this is, it's a practice and it's going to take time. So be kind to yourself. Don't be harsh to yourself about the fact that it's hard, that you forget, that you mess up, that you explode in reactivity. So what I like to suggest is that you practice getting good at cleaning up the mess. Now that's part of this exploration. You know, that you said something. And, you know, something that used to be really hard for me was to go to somebody and say, yeah, I really screwed up. My mind would, like, stand on its head to try to make it okay that I did what I did. You know, it's like, and at this point it's like, no, you know, I messed up. You know, it's actually much easier at some level to just acknowledge to somebody, yeah, I messed up. I apologize. You know, that wasn't so helpful. It really can take a burden off. And there are also times that you may notice, and this is, again, this is a more interactive realm of practice, that somebody is reacting to something where your intention was completely, you know, beautiful. You know, you were trying to be helpful and kind and friendly, and somehow they exploded. So that happens. You know, that happens a lot. And so there, you know, it's not so much that you need to clean up your own mess, but reflect on your own intention there. And in that situation, it's also not perhaps that you just say, well, it's their problem, but perhaps to, you know, recognize, wow, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't intend it that way. You know, I'm sorry that was so hard for you, or, you know, to not just, you know, dismiss them and figure it's their problem to deal with, but to actually acknowledge, oh, you know, I'm sorry that was your response. And maybe you can help them to understand your perspective. And in that exchange, and, you know, this may or may not happen immediately, you know, with some exchanges like this, for myself, I've seen this can take months. You know, somebody says something or I say something and there's a misunderstanding, and then I recognize that misunderstanding and I realize, oh, I need to talk to that person. You know, so it can be a long process. And so some patience around that process as well. You know, for myself, there's like acknowledging, well, there's that person out there that thinks such and such about me, and that's got to be okay for a little while, because it's not possible to bridge that that gap right now. So, you know, some patience around this process of meeting people. This is around that timely. Is the communication timely? So, you know, when somebody's exploding around something, it may not be the time to try to get them to see your perspective. You know, another time, perhaps when they have calmed down a little bit, you could come back and say, gosh, I'm so sorry, that was so painful, and let's talk about that. Let's see, what time is it? So I want to leave a little bit of time for questions or comments, because this can bring up some thoughts. So anybody have any thoughts they'd like to share? Yeah.
I'm not sure how to word this, but it seems like when we speak, sometimes emotions are evident in the speech that might be helpful in understanding what's the motivation behind the thoughts. And I was wondering if there's something to be said for talking to yourself. And
certainly, I mean, sometimes it seems that some of us can really, I mean, like, sometimes we know what's going on by verbalizing it in a way, you know, that that there's that sometimes that act of speaking can help us to access what's going on. So I would say, yeah, at times that can be helpful. And you know, if you want to do that to yourself, you know, talk to yourself, or if you have a trusted person you can talk to. You know, sometimes I found that if I had somebody I could talk to that I trusted wouldn't react to what I was saying, you know, then that could be a really helpful way to understand some things that were going on. So yeah, it can be helpful.
Yeah, I know talking to myself can help me with a logical problem, but I was wondering about I haven't tried listening to the emotional content as
for me, I think, you know, I think it might be different for different people. For me, I don't generally talk to myself about emotional stuff, but I can find there can be some access to certain emotions that I'm kind of, you know, if I'm feeling some confusion or some uncertainty or some unclarity, it can be helpful to talk about it with somebody that I trust. I haven't found trying to talk it to myself as helpful. It seems almost like it needs that other person to elicit that, you know, to begin to express, oh, here's this thread of confusion, and, you know, here's that, and here's what I think about that. And then it's like, oh, you know, you put together something. But it might work, you know, it might work for you, so you could play with it and see. Yeah, behind you.
So when you were talking about having a conversation with someone and feeling dismissed, I thought you must have been there when I was talking to my 20-something-year-old daughter today and trying to get some points across. And I sort of realized as she was not looking at me at all and walked out of the room once that, and I stopped actually, and I was aware of what was going on. And I actually tried a couple of relatively mindful things, but I can see that there's patterns with certain situations that have built up for so long that it takes something a little more radical or different to change the dynamics. And I also really appreciate what you said about in meditation about the daily part about, you know, think, oh, that's planning. So I can't just sit there and say, oh, this is reacting, this is, you know, it calls for action. There are some situations that call for action.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's kind of a struggle sometimes to figure out. It seems like you almost have to just choose one and accept that it may be unskillful.
At times, yes, at times it's kind of like, it's, you know, there might be an uncertainty about, well, do I choose this? Make as skillful a choice as you can if you're doing it consciously. You know, at times we don't do it consciously, and it's like the habitual response comes out, and then we have to work with however that came out. But at times it may be, I don't know really what the most skillful thing might be. But if you can connect with as much kindness and compassion in that moment as you can, you know, in that kind of situation, it might be, you know, you're right. I mean, certain patterns get established between people. You know, like patterns get rutted into our own minds, patterns get rutted into relationships as well. And so, you know, it could call for something different. Maybe not anger or yelling, but maybe just naming. You know, it seems like we're in a pattern here. Can we do something about this? Or, you know, just see what, change the way you are. You know, pick a new way to be and see what happens, how that might impact things. So, yeah, I mean, I can't really offer an answer, but sometimes we do just have to choose and then see, you know, how did that work? And it's kind of like in meditation, you know, it's like, okay, well, let me try paying attention to this for a while. Well, that didn't work very well. Let me try this. So we experiment, but doing it from as much skillfulness as we have access to in that moment.
Hi. It seems every time I hear a talk on the mindfulness of thoughts that I realize that a lot of my thoughts are not productive. And I realize often that I'm trying to think my way out of problems. I use thinking a lot to end suffering, and it's very not productive. Yeah. But at other times, it is productive. It does. So there are a few problems that I just take a little bit of distance, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm able with thinking to solve the problem. So is there a way to be mindful of the times where thinking will be helpful?
Yeah, I mean,
to end suffering.
You mean how to know when it's helpful to use thought and when it's not helpful to use thought? I think it takes experimentation, some, you know, to explore in your own life when it's helpful and when it's not helpful. Often it's not so helpful, and one of the things to kind of begin to try is to use, rather than trying to solve a problem, to see if you can sit in the problem with mindfulness. It's a radically different approach, actually. You know, it's like we typically think, I need to think my way out of this problem. And the mindful approach is to be willing to sit in the middle of the problem and not resist the problem. Now, there's certain times where we have problems and they demand a certain choice at some point, and then we have to make a choice. But a lot of times our problems don't actually demand a choice as soon as we think they do, and we can actually sit there. And that place of sitting in that discomfort, the willingness to sit in that place and not choose, it's like what seems to happen is that's the kind of place where, rather than thinking consciously, rather than trying to direct our way out with conscious thinking, an intuitive kind of approach can sometimes bubble up. When we're willing to just sit in the problem, sit with the feeling, sit with the confusion, sit with the uncertainty, in that willingness to sit that way with a problem, sometimes something completely different arises, and it offers a completely new approach. Now, it may arise in the form of a thought, So this is, you know, this is not not trying to suppress thoughts in that place of being willing to sit in the middle of the problem, but also not actively thinking, well, let me do that, let me do that, let me do that, let me, you know, think my way out of the problem. Rather, it's more trusting an intuitive wisdom to arise, which can arise when we're willing to just be with some issue. So that's an encouragement for an exploration. And we need to stop now. So, what I thought I'd do next time is to explore this process of thinking consciously. You know, how can we think productively? How can we use thought in a skillful way? Because that's, if we can begin to connect with a skillful way to think, that'll change our relationship to thinking. So that's what I thought I'd do next week. It'll be a little bit of a guided meditation and then some exploration around that. So thank you for your attention and your participation.